Peter and Paul both walked worthy of the calling. And we should be like them. Humble. Meek. Long-suffering. Forbearing. These are the qualities which define a walk worthy of the calling in which we have been called.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment, but first we want to say thanks for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church podcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This podcast can be found on iTunes by searching for Terry Bailey Ministries in the iTunes store, where you can also subscribe to the podcast and get the weekly message sent automatically to you by clicking the subscribe button. Right now, let's get back to Pastor Terry as he preaches this week's insightful message.
And again, good morning. I come today to a fourth stab at Ephesians chapter 4. As you know, if you listened the last few weeks, I had intended to preach this message originally all at once, and it just became obvious to me that I could not do that and get said what I thought needed to be said, especially about these four qualities. Today we'll make the fourth, that define what it means for us to walk worthy according to the calling with which we have been called. Now, as I review these, I can't go back and try to develop the words in the fuller sense that I did then, but I will tell you this. If any of this goes cold on you, you go to the church website, www.christforeastcanton.com, and click on the little button that says podcast. And from there, you can listen to almost any past sermon that has been preached here for quite some time. But you could listen to these again and review what it means that in order to walk worthy of our calling, we must be humble, lowly, not thinking more highly of ourselves than we ought. Gentle, meek, which means that such power as we have is broken to the yoke of Jesus Christ, so that it may be used profitably and without undue abrasion and injury to those around us. And long suffering, which is to say that you need to put a long span of time in front of your capacity for being provoked. It should take a lot of negative circumstances over a long time before we should be provoked to anger, for the anger of man does not accomplish the righteousness of God. There's the brief review of the past three messages, and today we come to the fourth quality. We must be humble, meek, long-suffering, and depending on the version that you are reading, you'll probably see one of two words, tolerant or forbearing, forbearance. Because of the current political usage, I'm not real fond of the tolerance word. So I'll go with forbearance as a good Bible word. And as with the others, I think that for us to really understand what's going on, we need to look a little bit at the nature of the word. As it is used in this passage, it is anekomai. Now, I don't expect everyone will remember all the Greek words, but think about this for the moment. Anekomai. And it is in the middle voice. I'll say something about that in just a moment. If you take the word out of the middle voice and put it in the active, I thought Andrew and Caleb would find this interesting. The word is anime. Yeah, there you go. Maybe a few other geeks in the congregation might, but I knew that Andrew and Caleb would find that interesting. In the middle voice, it is anekomai. Now, in English, we have the same thing. A verb may be in the active, passive, or middle voice. Voice is determined the voice of the person speaking. Active is when I, as the person speaking, am describing an action that I will take with regard to you. For instance, if I give Bill a good talking to, that's active. I, as the speaker, direct the action from me to Bill. If Bill gives me a good talking to first, that's not nearly as good or as fair. But second, if I describe it and I say, Bill gave me a good talking to, it is now passive because I'm the speaker, but the action is directed to me. I was not the instigator of the action. It came from elsewhere and came to me passive. Middle voice is when you say, I gave myself a good talking to. And I am the speaker and the author and the recipient of the action. This is middle voice. Now, you may not be much of a grammarian, but it is important in this passage to understand why a middle voice verb is used. If you take it back to the active voice, the word means to reduce tension. Now, I look out here and I see at least a half a dozen guys who are going to know what I'm talking about. When you set a corner post for a fence, how many of you have taken a big loop of wire and either looped it between the top of the corner post and the bottom of a brace post or to a ground anchor or to something else, and then you take a big stick and you start twisting that wire. And every time you twist it, it creates more tension to pull the corner post to the anchor and make it tight and solid and firm. And everyone who's done this knows the answer to this question. What happens if you give that wire one too many twists? From the laughter, I can see that this has happened to people besides me. The wire snaps, and the corner post jumps out of plumb, and you get to start all over. In the active sense, the word means to reduce or relieve tension before something breaks. Don't introduce so much tension, and it's especially into a human community, that things start breaking. Friendships are ruptured. Fellowship is broken. Affections are divided. As a general rule, in the active sense, you should not introduce so much tension. You should seek to relieve that tension so that breakage does not occur. The middle sense is generally translated something like holding myself back, which may seem like a different thought, but it's really the same thought. It means that you inevitably will do something that irritates me or displeases me, and I may feel that I need to charge in and fix it. And maybe I don't. Maybe I need to hold myself back. In the active sense, I say to somebody else, hey, chill. That would be our modern word to describe this. Chill. Relax, because you're about to break everything else. In the middle voice, as in this passage, I say to myself, Terry, chill, because you're about to cause a lot of unnecessary breakage. And maybe the thing that you're irritated about is just not that important. And maybe it's even okay if you take a minute to think about it. Most of us who have raised children have come to this juncture at least once or twice. We see our kids doing something and we anticipate the way in which it might go wrong, and we feel like we need to rush in and grab their hands and do it for them or make them do it right. And there comes a point when we say to ourselves, no, no, I need not to get in the way. I need to let them do this. And if it goes wrong, I'll help them then. But I need to let them do it. Or you look at something and you think, I need to correct my kid, and then you think, well, no, that's really okay. It's not what I would have done, but it's okay. They are their own person, and they don't have to be exactly like me. In the church, this happens on the very most trivial level. I can look around, and this is all just made up, so nobody take this personally. I'll just point generically, but I'm not pointing at anybody. I don't like the way you dress. And I don't like the way you laugh. And I don't like the way you greet people. You're doing it wrong. Because if you was doing it right, you'd do it the way I do it. Of course, the way that I do it is right. I don't like the way you're doing these things, and I need to fix it. Oh, really, do I? Or is it maybe okay, and I need to say, Terry, chill before you cause a lot of unnecessary breakage. And sometimes it's doctrinal disagreements. I disagree with you about the millennium, and I disagree with you about the rapture, and I disagree with you people in the middle about the definition of sanctification. And I need to fix it because, of course, I am right. And maybe on some doctrines I do need to fix it. There are lines we can't cross. But there are also areas where we can afford a little disagreement, and at the end of all things and the beginning of all things new, God will straighten us out on these points. And I need to chill before I cause unnecessary breakage. I don't like the decor. I don't like the order of worship. I don't like the music. A preacher should keep his hands out of his pockets when he's preaching. In the years of my growing up, there was a lady in the church at Eminence. My problem here is that I think her name was Mrs. Steerwalt. Because I wasn't on a first name basis with her. I could tell you her husband's name because I remember it. And I'm not sure what her name was. She was Mrs. Steerwalt. I think maybe it was either Gloria or Ruby, which tells you how uncertain I am about this. But Mrs. Steerwalt, I will call her Gloria, thinking that's right, but it may not be right. But what I'm going to tell you is right and true. Gloria sang. Gloria sang enthusiastically. Gloria sang with gusto and volume, shrilly off key, always in her own personal key signature rather than the one that the piano player and organist were using, that everybody else was trying to sing to. Gloria could drown out about everybody else in the building, and her voice was, I will admit it, just terrible. Terrible. This is true. And as a youngster, I became aware that two ministers in a row, one left and another came, and two ministers in a row, there were individuals who went to the preachers and said, something's got to be done about Gloria. Her singing is just so awful. And when visitors come in, it's bound to put them off. And the rest of us are having our worship experience ruined by Gloria's singing. You need to do something about her. And to the credit of these two men of God, they said to the folks who came to them, nothing needs to be done about glorious singing. Maybe you should sing louder if you're concerned about it. And at least to the best of my observation of the way she continued to sing until the day she died, nothing ever was said to her. Because she continued, as in the song that we sang a couple of weeks ago, praising God at the top of her lungs. Always off key. Always shrill. But making a joyful noise unto the Lord. It was an important lesson to me in my youth. And I so admire again those men of God who had the courage to stand up and say, chill. We're not going to wreak unnecessary breakage on the basis of unimportant preferences and likes. You know, I have likes and dislikes. Everybody here could probably name just right now the one food that I just about will not put in my mouth and chew up. Onions. It's onions. I'd rather have a bowl of dirt than to eat onions. And I've tasted dirt. This does not mean that you guys can't eat onions. This does not mean that fellowship dinners need to be onion-free. Can't govern everybody by my personal likes and dislikes, and even on matters more important than onions, my foibles, my personality, my preferences must not be allowed to get in the way of the bonds of unity and love that exist in the church. I must never, on the basis of trivialities, introduce such tension into the congregation that breakage occurs. This is called forbearance. And it's actually part of a little three-word sentence, forbearance in love. Now, even as I say that, I realize that some things have to be dealt with. If there's in the church, a case of embezzlement, a case of sexual immorality, a case of doctrine so flagrantly harmful as somebody not believing and teaching that Jesus is not the actual Christ, the Son of God, you got to deal with those things. But even when you deal with them in love. And about things less important, you don't have to deal with those things. And the reason you don't have to deal with them is the same as the reason you did have to deal with the others, because of love. And I won't go into the whole thing about the four different loves in the Bible. I will simply tell you that the word used in this passage, forbearance in love, is the word agape. It is the highest, godliest, most profound sort of love, an unconquerable good will, a good will that I hope I hold toward each of you as individuals, and a good will that I hope that all of us hold toward each other as the congregation of the saints of God here at Indian Run. And every once in a while, each of us has got to point inward and say, hey, chill! Because you're about to introduce such tension as to cause breakage over essentially nothing. Now, I've said that some of the things which irritate us and displease us are just okay. They're okay. But sometimes the picture is bigger than that. If you have read the New Testament, with a good critical eye, you will probably have caught on to this. Peter and Paul didn't really like each other as far as liking goes. Even the compliments that passed between the two men were a little bit on the backhand. And sometimes they weren't compliments at all. There was a little finger pointing, and they had different emphases. There was a big core of material that they both emphasized, but each of them had some individual emphases, and they had different methods. And it just shows that Peter and Paul were probably not what you would call best buds. And the way that one man did things irritated the other man. But neither really wanted to exclude or even fix the other. And how many of you would join me in affirming that God did great things with Paul, even though Peter may have been irritated by the man? God still did great things with Paul, huh? And God did great things with Peter, even though Paul may have been irritated with the man. Is that right? God did great things with both men, because that is God's business. The doing of great things with imperfect vessels of clay, so that the power and the glory may be seen to be of Him. And sometimes we would shut down the very things that God will work with in a powerful way, because they are personally unpleasing to us. Peter and Paul both walked worthy of the calling. And we should be like them. Humble. Meek. Long-suffering. Forbearing. These are the qualities which define a walk worthy of the calling in which we have been called. If it's not the walk we've been taking, it's not too late to get in step yet. Ask God, and He will help you become humble, meek, long-suffering, forbearing, and walk worthy of His call.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our faithful listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church podcast. You can find out more about the church by visiting our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. That's www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.